Okay, so welcome to Google App Engine Introduction, including those of us joining over the internet via podcast, the ones down here in this little red thing. So my name is Charles Severance, of course, and this material, including the audio that you're currently listening to, is copyright Creative Commons attributions. You can use it any way that you like. So we're going to talk a little bit about web applications. I'm going to talk fast. Feel free to slow me down if you want, okay? So the basic idea of Google App Engine is that Google has been writing these kinds of applications, like search, that are extremely large data applications, and they have to be extremely fast. And so they're really, in some ways, very different than any kind of application that they've ever built. And Google, although this is not sort of publicly agreed to, but I sort of understand from people I know at Google, that Google had several ways of writing code. They have three basic languages at Google that they use in their programming. One is Java, one is C++, and one is Python. And that's how they've always been. So their simple, prototypical early work is always done in Python. Things like Gmail, that's done in Java and GWT. And some of their like low latency messaging libraries, that's all in C++. They don't do a lot of UI stuff in C++. And so really what App Engine is they're revealing of how it is that they build servers. And Google builds servers and services very differently than the rest of us. you know about this stuff. We don't cover that. So let's talk a little bit about cloud computing. So in a pre-cloud view of the world, what we would do is we would either buy or install some connection to the internet in some machine room, and we would have a router, and then we'd have a couple of servers, and we would know exactly where that physically was. And we would connect to our customers, and we could actually sit on a Google map, and we would know exactly where those servers were and know everything about them. They have a geographic location, they have a geographic IP address, and everything about them is known. They are a particular set of servers in a particular machine room. But for world-scale applications like Google, their servers are all around the world, and their data is all around the world. There's a single view of these things. But if you think about it, not even the Google programmers, no matter how smart they are, could ever understand the particular configuration of the Google equipment around the world, because it always changes. Sometimes it changes on an hourly or daily basis. And so there are guesses as to where all the Google servers are, right? And there's, you know, guesses that there's 30 or 40 of these data centers. And there's some really cool YouTube videos of Google data centers that are sort of these giant pods of computers that are sort of plugged in, and they can unplug whole pods of computers. Clearly, one thing that Google has learned is to buy inexpensive, very green computers and scale the number of CPUs greatly, and not try to get the world's fastest CPUs, but get the best, most ecological CPUs and the best price performance CPUs, and then roll them over time. And so Google, in a sense, has its own internet that's a backbone of our internet. And if you, and most of you probably travel far more than most Americans, but if you go to South Africa, for example, you find that it's Google's connection to South Africa is better than Africa's connection to South Africa. And you can get better stuff if you go through Google than if you just go across the internet. So I want to show you a little bit of video, and I'll turn it up as loud as I can. This is a Google I.O. Keynote by one of their vice presidents, I think employee number 25 or something, Marissa Meyer. And I have the URL, and you have this URL on your material. And she comes from a usability perspective, but I think that she does a really good job of explaining how the Google infrastructure is quite different. And I was at this Google, this was last year's well, 2 years ago, Google I.O., the first worldwide developer conference of Google, where they announced this. So let me go find Marissa and show that to you. I hope. There we go. So let's see if we can just be quiet and hear through my speakers. No one has any speakers handy, do they? That's okay. I think we'll hear them. I'm in the middle of the room.
words for...
You're not hearing that, right?
Code. Maybe because you want to write some, maybe because you're interested in the Tim O'Reilly book.
Can people hear that? Gee. Okay, well then I'll have to narrate. I'll play it and then I'll explain it.
But as I said, like, I think that it is important to think about how sometimes the simplest design actually is the right answer. When you think about what happens behind a Google search, it's really complicated. Let's say you did a search for beautiful code, maybe because you want to write some, maybe because you're interested in the Tim O'Reilly book. What would happen is if you issued that search from here today, it would go and it would bounce through some of our data centers. At this time of day, our data centers are all running fairly hot, so it probably bounced through before it found a data center that could actually accept the query. It would then enter the data center. It would first be greeted by a series of machines called load balancers. These are the machines that watch all the other machines to see who's busy and who's not. And actually, they would go ahead and earmark your query for a mixer. The mixer is the set of the infrastructure we have that mixes together our, all of our universal results, our ad results. It then gets earmarked for a web server. We'll query a bunch of web servers and mark one that actually is going to respond to your query. And then it hits about 300 to 400 backends that are all the different forms of search, all the different forms of ads, gathers together the best results. Then it's time for your query to go back to the mixer, which mixes those all together, getting things in the right relevance order, getting the right blend of universal results in, the right blend of advertising in. And then goes to the web server, where it will write out the actual HTML for the page. The load balancer marks it as done. And the query then travels back to you. A lot of complications. Actually, in that time, your query will have hit somewhere between 700 and 1,000 machines. It will probably have bounced at the speed of light between several different data centers, coming back to you with about 5 million results in about 0.16 seconds. Very, very complicated technology, but behind a very simple interface. We think that that's the best way to do things. Our users don't need to understand how complicated the technology and the development work that happens behind this is. What they do need to understand is that they can just go to a box, type what they want, and get answers. And that's why Occam's razor about the simplest design yielding the right answer is so important and works so well for us.
Okay, so for those of you, it's just lovely. I get the hair in the back of my neck goes up in a good way just when she says it. To me, it's like going to church, right? To hear from her mouth how Google works. So this is the essence of it. And I don't know how many people know this, but it's like, wow, the world is changing. So the essence of Google's search is not that they've got one really cool database server running like Super Oracle, right? They've got a bunch of stupid servers that know just a little tiny corner of the internet. And in little over 1/10 of a second, your query has gone through about 1,000 servers at 4 or 5 locations to produce that information. And that's how their search is different than any database thing that we've ever looked at. And so that's why later today, when I start talking about Google App Engine, I'm focusing on the data store, because that is the part where all of a sudden we're building a different kind of an application that can scale across thousands of servers. Now the key thing about this is we're all sharing these 1,000 servers. The 1,000 servers aren't for one people. So you could think of searches as waves going across these 1,000 servers, and they all come out in about a little over 1/10 of a second. And so we all have to use all the servers all the time, and that's how Google works. And so App Engine is basically our ability to program this kind of scalable data infrastructure. So if you know anything about Hadoop, Hadoop is kind of like the open source imitation. And Hadoop is, when you want to scale a terabyte of data, you can stick a terabyte of data in your pocket, but you can't read a terabyte of data in, you know, less than 2.5 hours. No matter what you do, you can't read through it. But if you can spread the data across thousands of servers, sharding it across those servers, you can read through a terabyte of data in under 1/10 of a second if you spread it out far enough. And that's the essence of why this is different than any kind of programming that we've really ever done. And the beauty is everybody's kind of figuring this out. And the fun now is that we can play with it on Google App Engine without having to have 1,000 servers. Because it's only fun if you got 1,000 servers. It's not fun if you've only got one. Okay, any questions on that? So Hadoop is sort of like super advanced roll-your-own Google is what Hadoop is. So Hadoop is pretty cool. So let's continue back. So there's Marissa. Hang on. Let me do something here. So, what we're going to do, and I didn't, and again, Google's never told me this, but when I wrote the book, there was a bunch of people from Google who were reviewing the book to make sure that it wasn't wrong. And one of the things that one of them told me was they'd already started using my book to give to beginning programmers that they just hired at Google. So they won't officially admit that this is what Google programmers write in, but it is what they give to incoming programmer hires. And so at Google, just because you're a programmer at Google, they don't want you screwing up the system, right? They don't let you touch the raw stuff. Google programmers operate in an abstracted environment. And so they program, they figure out their data, but it's a complex software framework that nobody gets to touch except really the core system people. That's how the programmers don't worry about geography, don't worry about the actual location. They simply work inside their abstraction and work inside their cloud. So instead of sort of having the sense of, I have my servers and they're at this position in this rack and they're connected to the internet, you just pretty much know that your software just kind of somewhere lives in this cloud. As a matter of fact, most of the time your software is nowhere. Most software is on disk. It only wakes up when it gets the first request. So your software is not even running. So your software lives in the cloud. So the geographic location of the software no longer matters. When you upload a new version of your application, it's distributed around the world, and wherever the request comes in is what starts your application. So resources can be dynamically allocated as the cloud load changes, both geographically and in terms of compute load. So as it just makes multiple copies of your software, and then as it goes down. So in this pre-cloud view, you know, we would worry if our server was bored or whatever, but, you know, in the cloud, we just sort of do our thing and we just, you know, it wakes up in England or wakes up in America, whoever happens to be using it. And if you think about HTTP request response, this is what allows Google to lie, cheat, and steal and even fake things like domain names, because HTTP is such a clear standard of doing a GET and getting stuff back. You don't really need to know the magic that went on behind the curtain to get the stuff back. So you could imagine a situation where you're in the cloud, your user makes a request, and it goes to one server somewhere, one instance of your application, and it comes back. But it's entirely possible that you could make a request to a server, and that server could send it back, or you make a request and something goes wrong, or it gets forwarded to another system, and then that other system might send it back, and you really wouldn't even know that it happened. So Google can do all kinds of tricks on you that you have no idea what's going on. And that's, you as a programmer don't need to know that. So basically, in summary, this is sort of like, it moves the computing into the internet. The internet is not just the connection, but the data and the processing is right in there. So if you think of Google's intranet, it is a data, compute, and communication thing that is worldwide. And so we get to run on that stuff. Now, we won't go through these videos, but there's a number of really good videos by the Google folks because they want to scale this. And so feel free to go look at those videos. There's a really good one. That was the original one that talks about how to build an app engine. We'll go through all these things. Let's see. Free accounts. So you get to get a certain amount, like about a gigabyte a day of free space, a free transfer. You actually can run out of that. And they want you to pay for it. And if you ask them why App Engine is free, well, they claim it's to make the web better. And I think there's truth in that, but I think they also want to be the first widely used cloud environment, and they want to beat Microsoft, Amazon, and Yahoo to the punch. Okay, so that's the intro, and the whole idea of that intro was for me to say a bunch of words while you got the software installed and working. Does anybody have any questions with getting the software installed and working? Are we really like all those who want to have the software installed working, have it working?
Yep.
Then that introduction did its purpose. Okay, so the next thing we're going to talk about is, come back. We're going to move to chapter 5. Chapter 5. Oops, come back. Now what I'll do is I'll pop in and out of chapter 5 and show you where the files are. Now you, by the way, you also have all these slides on your on the USB stick, and they're just all numbered with the obvious numbers. Okay. No, no, I'll get there. I'm just kind of getting in the right place. Okay, so the first application that we're going to work on is AE03 web app. Okay? And so, I mean, you can run it if you want. But I'm going to talk about it, and because it's the it's the first thing that uses the what's called the web app framework. Ooh, let me stop my audio and start it back up again, so I keep them separate.